Welcome to the Rick Fuller Podcast, presented by Rick Fuller, the team leader of the Rick Fuller team, which serves the San Francisco Bay Area and the greater Sacramento region. Rick is a community leader, national real estate coach, and real estate investing expert. Today, we have an important topic, how to diversify your real estate portfolio. Of course, Rick is our expert in all things related to residential real estate, but we have a special guest today that I'm truly excited to introduce to you. Matt Hagar is the president of Intero Commercial East Bay and excels at educating and advising his clients to make the best commercial real estate decisions in a constantly changing market. Welcome, Matt. We're so glad you're here.
Hi. Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Rick, I'm going to start with you. Clearly, you know a ton about residential real estate. You're our go-to guy. And you help us with purchasing our first home, owning long-term rentals. We've even covered Airbnbs. We've covered a lot over the past 4 years. So as a real estate investor, why should I also look into commercial real estate?
Christina, I have been looking forward to this podcast for so long to bring Matt on, because Matt and I work very closely together. And it's really because there are different levels of real estate investors. You know, you have that speculator that you and I talk about. They just speculate on the market, where it's going. They're in hopes. They're aspirational. They don't know, but they speculate and they buy based on speculation. Then you got this real estate investor. They're much better than the speculator of real estate. But the real estate investor, they do the numbers. The numbers tell them what to do. They have a particular niche model. They like to buy a certain type of product. The numbers pencil out. They buy it. But then you've got this real estate collector today. And the real estate collector, they don't just buy residential. They don't buy just short-term. They don't buy just long-term rental properties. They don't just buy in their state. They buy out of state. And they also add commercial property. And one of the amazing things about real estate collectors above and beyond both the speculator and the investor is it inherently creates diversification in their portfolio. You can't spend 5 minutes with a stockbroker before they mention the word diversification. And with real estate, you can be diversified by buying different asset classes. And that's why I have Matt here to talk about how we can do that.
Great. So Matt, why did you choose to specialize in commercial real estate? I could picture you as a five-year-old boy playing Monopoly. I'm going to specialize in commercial real estate. And when I think of commercial real estate, in my limited perspective, I think of storefronts and office buildings. Is there more to it than that? Can you give us a little of your background?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I've been doing this for about 13 years now. I got into real estate right after I graduated from college and just kind of never looked back. I bounced around early on, got exposed to, you know, different parts of real estate, from some property management to the residential side. For me, it just comes down, I think, personality and skill sets. You know, it's what it takes to be a successful residential agent versus a commercial agent is just very different. What we do is very analytical, a lot of numbers and spreadsheets and calculations and things like that. Generally, you know, fairly unemotional. It's just people care about their returns and that's about it. And so for me, I'm kind of a, you know, cut and dry person, and it was just a better fit for me and my personality as well. And I like the math. I like the spreadsheets. I like kind of, you know, getting nerdy a little bit, if you will, and digging into properties really deeply. And so It just called to me. It appealed to me more, and I guess the rest is history. So
what entails commercial real estate?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different food groups in commercial real estate per se. There's basically four main asset classes. There's office, retail, industrial, and multifamily, which would technically be considered five units and above. Anything four and below would be residential. And so there's the four main food groups, but then there's so many subgroups within those. You know, you've got, you know, strip retail, you've got malls, you know, you've got standalone single tenant buildings, you know, you've got class A, B, and C, et cetera, you know, even more, like niche things right now that are very popular, like data centers or like cold storage, which is, you know, storing food and such. Those are very unique, very specialized uses, but they also, you know, have a lot of investment merit to them, if you will.
That's great. I'm already learning so much, Rick. So, I know, it's
great. Getting started.
And Rick, I know that you're a prolific real estate investor. We have a lot of episodes talking about different types of real estate investments. So what got you started into branching out into commercial real estate?
Well, actually, Christine, I kind of stumbled into it. I own various types of properties in the state of California and outside of the state of California. And I find myself leasing a commercial building myself. So here I am as a tenant, I'm leasing a building. And I thought to myself, I'm probably the best tenant I've ever met. I take good care of the property. I always pay my rent on time. If there's an issue with the property, I just take care of it. I resolve it. So why would I want to be a tenant for somebody else? Why wouldn't I want to be a tenant for myself? So I ended up buying a commercial building. It became what we call owner user. Matt's very familiar with that term. I ended up renting back the building as a corporation from my trust. And now I was able to rent the building and have a great built-in tenant. Hello, it's me who pays their rent on time. I've never bounced a check. I've never missed payroll in over 20 years of issuing payroll. Why wouldn't I want myself to be a tenant? Why wouldn't I want to accumulate equity? Why wouldn't I want to reduce the principal balance? Why wouldn't I want the tax benefits of owning commercial real estate? Why wouldn't I want the ability to sublease it? Why wouldn't I want the ability to create long-term retention and brand recognition in a particular location so I wasn't subject to landlord's whims of like, hey, we're going to sell the building and you got to move. And now all of my agents and all my clients who know the one location I'm at, I've got to move and it has nothing to do with me. So why would I want to put myself at that risk? So we ended up buying that commercial building, became a tenant from myself. And it's been a great move ever since. And that was my first venture into commercial real estate. Boy, Christina, that was like 10 years ago. I am so glad I made that move all those years ago.
That's just so smart. That's really smart. Matt, I need you to address the elephant in the room. In residential, we're seeing the impact of interest rates and inflation and limited inventory. There's a lot going on. What are you seeing in commercial? How are all of these world factors impacting your aspect of real estate?
Business as usual. No, just kidding. it's definitely turned into a very unique market. I mean, everybody knows about interest rates. Everyone talks about interest rates. It's no surprise. You know, inflation, I think, you know, you'd have to live under a rock to not have heard that in the last year and a half or so. We are absolutely affected just as much as residential, if not more, to be honest with you. Interest rates have applied a lot of downward pressure to commercial markets. You know, if you think about it, just kind of step back logically, you know, residential, you can either invest and buy, you know, a home as an investment, or you can buy it to live in, right? Nobody but lives in any of the properties that they buy with me, right? And so it's a totally different decision, right? Because if people need to live somewhere, they got to live somewhere. And sometimes they may make a decision that financially might look a little funky, but they have to have a roof over their head. Where my customers are, you know, predominantly investors or businesses, and they are looking at the numbers, right? It's nothing but numbers, back to the spreadsheets and everything. And with interest rates so high, there's just a lot less deals that make sense in this kind of market. And they're not necessarily under the same pressure. There was a whole lot of wealth generated over the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. There's a ton of equity in properties, and people are just kind of sitting tight. They're just kind of, you know, patient, and nobody's too squeezed right now. So, you know, sitting on their hands, so to speak, doing nothing. And so, overall volume, transactional volume is down significantly because of that. And again, you know, buyers and sellers, all the buyers, I think probably there's more blood in the water than there really is right now. It hasn't really come to fruition. And again, the landlords or the sellers aren't really hurting enough to, you know, have a desperation sale. So, buyer and seller, there's the disconnect, right? And so that's why deals aren't getting done, because nobody can agree. Buyers want a deal. sellers aren't willing to give a deal yet. So we're seeing less volume. We're seeing prices, you know, slow drop in certain categories. I mean, I don't know how much detail you want me to get in, but I mean, I could talk through each asset class because they all behave differently because they have different drivers, but they all perform very much independently of each other for the most part.
So, Rick, can you build on that a little bit too? What advice would you give to someone who's thinking about expanding their real estate portfolio in the current market that Rick, that Matt just described?
Yeah, you know, Christina, we all are aware of kind of market timing, right? Like we know where the interest rates are. We know that, you know, there's not enough inventory. We kind of know that the interest rates has made properties a little less affordable. Matt talked about all that. Even financing is less available. But there's another market that nobody's talking about, and it's a huge mistake. There's the timing of various markets, and then there's the timing in your life and the timing in my life. And every time I'm with a group of real estate investors and I ask them, how many people here wish they would have done this 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago? There is not a single hand in the room that doesn't shoot up. There's the timing of the market and there's the timing of your life. And what I'm convinced is the timing in your life to own property, to expand your real estate portfolio is far more important than the timing of the market. You can ride out markets. As Matt said, values have significantly increased. Equity has accumulated. Investors have benefited from tax deductions and depreciation and all various things that an investor benefits from, that if they just continue to wait for what they think is the perfect market, hello, there is no perfect market. Rates go down, prices go up. What you can do oftentimes is refinance. You can't go back and claw back that equity by waiting for a perfect time to buy property. So I think the timing in our life supersedes and is far more important than the timing of the real estate market. It's why, you know, Christina, I'm buying real estate in this market. I probably bought more properties and sold more properties in the last 24 months than I have, my goodness, much of my life. Because I'm not just telling you what I believe. I'm not one of those agents just like, you know, you ought to buy, you ought to sell. Is it a good time to buy? Of course. Is it a good time to sell? Of course. Like, I'm not that kind of guy. What I am telling you, I'm personally buying and selling in today's real estate market because I believe the timing of my life is far more important than the timing of the market.
Yeah, that's so true. Even just the housing market, when I look at what my parents spent on their house in the 80s compared to what it's worth now, you're so right.
And you go back even further than that, Christina, you just see values have risen. If you've got, you know, a typical financing, you've probably added a lot to the principal balance. You wrote off a lot of the depreciation and the interest and all of the maybe the property taxes, depending on the state. Like, you've really benefited by owning real estate. And what ends up happening is we just get confused. We read the headlines on CNN or Fox News or CNBC or whatever, and all of a sudden we just, what Matt talked about, we just stall. And the people that I talk to, they wish they would have bought more properties, not less.
Mm-hmm. If I could piggyback on that for a minute, I agree wholeheartedly, you know, and yes, there's a lot more news, you know, headlines out there than there were a couple years ago. You know, the market for, you know, better part of a decade was almost like so boringly consistent. It might have lulled people to sleep a little bit. You know, it just went up and up and up and it just kind of did the same thing. There wasn't a lot of turbulence and, you know, now there is. And so, you know, the great Warren Buffett has a quote that I'm sure everyone, you know, has probably heard, but, you know, to be fearful when others are greedy and greedy only when others are fearful, right? So basically buy when everyone's selling and sell when everyone's buying for the most part. And that could apply to stocks or real estate or anything. So what I tell my agents, what I tell my clients, really step back, kind of a different theme of what Rick just said about your own timing, but step back, remove the emotion. And, you know, again, commercial is a lot less emotional anyways. Just remove the emotion and really look at what's going on. Look at where you're at. And see, the thing is, people are scared, right? They just are, right or wrong. And people are going to make bad financial decisions when they're scared. So you need to back up. You need to separate yourself from the fear, because fear is not going to lead to good decision makings. And I see a ton of opportunity right now and leading into the future, because again, other people are going to be zigging and I will be zagging, you know, kind of thing. So I just kind of wanted to throw that in there because I think it's an important point.
You know, what's interesting, Christine, about what Matt just said is that when you talk to people who don't track the market, it's easy to correlate today's market to 2008 in their mind. They, well, okay, my goodness, you know, the last time the market shifted, it was in 2008. And really what you find is there are very little similarities between today's market and 2008. Actually, the greater comparison is today's market to the 1980s. So when you look at 2008, which way was inflation going? It was going down. What happened now? Inflation's going up. Which way were interest rates going in 2008? They were going down. Where are they going now? They're going up. Which way was home values going in 2008? They were going down. Which way are they going now? They're going up. You look at even inventory. 2008, there was a ton of inventory. We called them foreclosures and short sales. They were going up, the inventory. Then you look at today, inventory is down. So it's the complete opposite of 2008. So what we look at is in 1980, we saw inflation. In 1980, we saw higher interest rates. In 1980, we began to see less inventory on the market. What happened after 1980? It's called the great real estate boom is what happened. And as you said a few minutes ago, Christina, your family members who bought a property in the 80s, how well they did. That is a better comparison to today's market. You will find a lot more similarities to the 1980s than you do today. And I believe what's going to happen is we're going to see another real estate boom. And those who have moved in this market will capture equity. They will be on the right side of history.
That's such great advice. So Matt, I know nothing about commercial real estate. I'm knocking on your door. I'm your client. How do I get started? Tell me, what do I do? How do I remove this fear? Because, you know, it's a lot of money and we're hearing so much news, like you both have been saying. What would you tell me as your client?
Yeah, sure. A good question. I mean, depending on where you are, right, and where you are in your life, it might be slightly different answers. You know, if you're in your 20s trying to buy your first property, or, you know, you're looking to set yourself up for retirement, you know, those might be different answers. But generally speaking, I mean, you need to get knowledgeable. You need to study and research the markets, and you need to hook up with someone that knows the markets. You know, someone like myself. I'm not saying you have to talk to me, but just someone like myself that knows the markets and knows what's going on, knows where the landmines are out there, knows where the pitfalls are, can guide you and be a trusted resource. Because, I mean, the amount of articles I've read, the amount of studies I've looked at, the amount of properties I've analyzed, the amount of properties I've bought and sold for people, right? I mean, there's probably a 0.1% of investors in the country that even have that much exposure, right? And so they weren't my deals necessarily, but I was right there in the thick of it. So there's a lot of experience there that can help you, because there are very treacherous things out there that you need to be aware of, especially in commercial. Because it's a lot more of, you know, buyer beware sort of mentality. You know, residential has tons and tons of disclosures. We don't. We have disclosures, but like one form basically mandatory, and then everything else is gravy. So so anyway, that would be kind of some advice, is make sure that you're not jumping in. Don't you know, almost like the gambling advice mentality. Don't bet more than you're willing to lose. You know, if you don't know. You know, if you're not comfortable, don't go too big, too fast. Don't over leverage. You know, all those things could really hurt you, you know, depending on the situation.
You talked about the four different types of commercial real estate in the beginning of the podcast. Is there one that would be best to kind of dip your toe in the water, or does it depend more on the unique property?
I try to shy away from generalizations like that, as, you know, best property or best asset class, because kind of back to what I just said, everyone's situation is different. Everyone's risk profile is different. Like I said, all four of those asset classes, you know, I could give you a different answer on how they're doing right now. Some are still going very strong. Some are cratering, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean you should even buy one or the other, because it depends. Like, a lot of people should be going for the stuff that's still relatively safe and going up. But like someone like myself that has a higher level of sophistication, well, I'm highly interested in what's cratering, right? But it's a lot more treacherous. It's a lot more perilous, but the upside can be significantly greater. So it really just depends on your profile, on which route you should go.
That's good to know. And this question's for both of you. We've had a lot of people ask us about 1031 exchange. So Rick, can you start us off? Tell us a little bit about what that is. And then both of you chime in. What does this look like in residential and in commercial?
Yeah, you know, 1031 exchange, Matt, I think you would agree, is the best gift ever given to real estate investors on the planet. It truly is a great tool that you can use, and it is so misunderstood. You know, Christina, if you had a, let's say you have a retirement account, a 401k or an IRA, whatever, did you know that you can move stocks within that retirement account without paying taxes on that? Like, you can do that prior to, you know, you being of an age in which you can take a withdrawal of that account. So if you didn't like Apple, you could sell Apple and you could buy more Google. And as long as you kept it in your 401k, as long as you kept it in your IRA, you'd likely be okay and not pay capital gains tax because you're buying one and selling another. And the reason that is, Christina, is because, well, you're investing, yes? So it's the same thing with real estate. There's a clause, there's a line item with the IRS. It's actually known as a line item 1031. That's where that term comes from, in which you can do the same thing you could do with individual stocks in your retirement account. You can trade properties. You can move one property to the next property. This gives you the ability to move up. So imagine you have a property and it's just not producing what we'd call the best cap rate. We just don't have enough income. There's just not enough cash flow. I can sell that property, take that equity with a certain amount of time, and I can drop it into another home or another investment. I could sell a residential property and do a 1031 exchange, take the equity, and then I can put it into a commercial property. I could do that. I could take it from one residential property to a multiplex, like an apartment. So it's designed not for your primary residence. This is not designed for your home. There's other great tax benefits for that. We've talked about that in previous podcasts. This is designed for investors. Now, watch the math on this. And this is why it makes sense. Let's just hypothetically say you have a real estate investment worth, I don't know, $1 million. And you want to trade that property. You want to move up in the quality of your portfolio. You want to have better quality investments. You want to create a higher income. You want to have a better rate of return, all of those things, maybe greater tax benefits. So if you use the 1031 exchange, you sell the $1 million property and you take much of that $1 million and you move it over to the next property. And maybe a few years later, you decide to do the same thing. You take another $1 million from that property and you move it over to the third property, and you can do that. But if you didn't use a 1031 exchange, it might look something like this. Hypothetically, let's say that you had $1 million property and you sold it. Well, you got to pay capital gains tax. So now we only have 75% of that equity to move over because we paid capital gains tax. So now we have $750,000. Then we do it again for the third property. We took a $750,000 property, we paid 25%. Of capital gains tax, and now we're down to what, 560, right? 550, 560 range. In other words, we took $1 million asset, and by trading it to improve it and to upgrade our portfolio, we've actually lost value in the property. So the 1031 exchange allows us to sell one and buy another with the gain, with the equity that you have. And there's a lot of little rules and details. That's why you need, like Matt was saying, a pro. You know, for the commercial side, talk to Matt. If you have residential questions, contact me, because there are a lot of details that I'm not covering. But the most simplest way to describe a 1031 exchange is that you're able to move up the quality of your real estate portfolio without paying capital gains tax. And what you're doing is the 1031 deferred. You're deferring it until one day you decide to sell that property.
Thank you. And Matt, how does this apply to commercial?
Yeah, absolutely. So great summary, Rick. So I won't, I'll just try to touch on a couple other different things. You know, it works the same for commercial or residential. There isn't like a commercial 1031 or a residential 1031. There's no differentiation. And then just to answer a quick question that I get all the time, probably the most common, the whole like for like thing. People get confused by that because, you know, to be qualified has to be a like for like transaction. People think that means like if I sell land, I have to buy land, or if I sell an office, I have to buy an office. That is not what that means. Like for like, easier way to explain it would be investment for investment, would be a better way. So as long as what you're selling is an investment, AKA not your primary residence, right? And then you're buying an investment, AKA not your primary residence, should be able to qualify. Again, talk to your tax professional to make sure, but you know, it absolutely should. And then also, your example about basically stepping down as you trade and keep paying capital gains, you also have to pay cost recovery or your depreciation recapture, which a lot of people aren't aware of either. So most people are familiar with your standard straight line depreciation that you get. When you sell a property, you actually get taxed on those tax breaks that you've taken thus far. So you're actually getting hammered in two different ways, from capital gains and from cost recovery. So you could be looking at 40% a loss instead of 25%. So it can go down quick. The other part, as it relates, the 1031 is an amazing vehicle. Like Rick said, it's an absolute gift. Probably one of the best sections ever written in any part of the tax code, I would imagine. The other second part of that is the step up in basis, which people should absolutely understand as well, because the 1031 with the step up in basis is, in my opinion, probably the best wealth generator in this entire country. And I will debate anyone on that, because I won't get into it. Again, I'm not an accountant, I'm not an attorney, but it allows you to continue to trade properties via 1031 throughout your entire lifetime. When you pass away, assuming everything is set up right and your kids or your heirs or whoever inherits that property, everything resets basically. And so your tax burden, you know, basically dies with you, you know, a little crude, but that's what happens. And so your kids can get that property that maybe you bought it for $100,000, you know, 40, 50 years ago. It's worth $5 million now. It's as if they just bought it today for $5 million and it's worth $5 million. So there's no appreciation. There's no taxes that are trailing. It's a clean reset, and it's an incredible part of the tax code as well that people need to be aware of.
One of my favorite types of 1031 exchange, there's a traditional, that's what Matt and I have thus far been talking about. And I use 25%, not that that's your capital gains, so that I can easily do the math in my head for this podcast. That's what I use, the 25%. Sure. Sure. Matt's right. You might be upwards of 30, 35, some people 40% when it comes to all your capital gains tax that you're going to pay. But so that's a traditional, but there's another type of 1031 exchange that most investors, even savvy investors, are not aware of. And it's a reverse 1031 exchange, which really helps if you're looking for a unique property. And a lot of great investments, they're unique. They come on the market. They're there for a short period of time, and you got to be able to jump on it. And what a reverse 1031 exchange does is allow you to buy the replacement property before you sell the relinquished property. What most people think of is, I'm going to sell the property, then I'm going to go find another one. This one allows you to go find the other one and then go back and sell the relinquished property, the one you're letting go. And that has been a great tool that we're using, so that you can get just the right property when it comes on the market. You can jump on it immediately. You can acquire it. You can get it into the rental market. And then you can sell the relinquished property. And it's an incredible tool most investors do not know exists pertaining to a 1031 exchange.
Is there a time limit between when you sell one property and you invest in the next?
Yeah, Christina, there's some timelines that are important to a 1031 exchange. And the nice thing about the reverse 1031 exchange, it kind of almost, well, it reverses the timeline. So most people are concerned in the amount of time that they have to find the next property and then to close escrow. And what this does is it makes the property you have to identify in a certain amount of time. It makes it the one you already own. So you're not wondering what property you're going to identify. You already know the address you identify. So a lot of people like that because it takes some of the pressure of the timelines off. And now we just need to close escrow in 180 days. And so the reverse 1031 exchange for the right investor can really allow you to wait for that right property, jump on it, secure it, and not have the pressures of the timelines that so often 1031 exchanges are known by.
That just makes sense, especially when we're talking about the current market and this unique market, especially what Matt was saying earlier, that it takes away that question mark.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Matt, what is a DST and why would an investor use this as their replacement property?
Yeah, sure. So a DST stands for Delaware Statutory Trust. It's a different kind of investment vehicle with some very unique nuances that there's some pros and there's some cons. It's not for everyone. It can be a great option. What it is basically in a nutshell is it's a fractional ownership of a property. So there's someone who sets up the DST. They're called the sponsor and they're the ones orchestrating the deal, some sort of real estate professional, and they're raising money. They're often big properties, but I mean, it could be 10, 20, 50, $100 million property that they're buying. And you as the investor, you put in X amount of the deal and you get the corresponding percentage of ownership. So instead of 100% ownership, like if you had a rental home or something, you might own 1% or 3% or something like that. And so that's both good and bad. If you really want passive investment, it can be good because someone else is doing all the work and you're getting just the return. You're not dealing with tenants or anything of that nature. And you don't have to go there, but you know, you also lose control with the DST, which is what a lot of people don't like because you're only a small fractional owner and someone else is calling the shots. You really have no management authority or any oversight on what happens with the deals. And do we sign this tenant to a lease? Do we sell? Do we keep holding it? Things like that. So you're a little bit at their mercy, which a lot of people don't like. Also, it's easy to get into them. It can be somewhat hard to get out of them because, you know, you just kind of jumped on a massive ship with a bunch of other investors, right? It's like, if you want to get off, well, the ship's still going, like you got to go swim yourself to shore. You know, it's not going to detour for you, you know? So you're kind of along for the ride sometimes. And, you know, you would have to find a very specific buyer for your portion of the pie, right? And so that can get really, really tricky. And so sometimes you're stuck. So that's one of the downsides. There's also fees and stuff that you're going to have to pay to whoever's sponsoring the deal. So those would eat into your profits, into your cash flow. They are 1031 eligible, which is a really important point because what a lot of my investors do, a DST is not necessarily their first choice, but it's often like a last case resort. And you have your 45 days to identify your three properties, which is the most common way. There's others like the 200% rule, but for the three properties, most people are aware of that one. If you're struggling, you're up against your 45 days, you can write down the DST as one of your, you know, say your third option. And it's pretty much, you know, I don't want to say guaranteed, but I mean, it's pretty much a slam dunk that you'll be able to place money into that deal and fulfill your exchange and avoid the major tax consequences that Rick spoke about earlier. So it can be a little bit of a Hail Mary, if you will, in a pinch.
You know, Matt's right. It's got to be for the right investor. And if you kind of think about the life cycle of an investor, oftentimes they start off with a condo and they're managing it themselves. And now, you know, the toilet is clogged and they're out there plunging it or they're making repairs to the. And the next thing you know, they've got a single family home and now they're managing that. And then they have a commercial property and they have a property manager. And they get to the end of the life cycle of investing. And they're like, I just want to be hands off. Like, I'm done. I'm ready to just have this to be 100% passive. And that tends to be where the DST comes in. So again, it's not right for everybody, but in the right circumstances, it fits the life cycle of an investor who's ready just to kind of step away and then move those funds in a 1031 exchange to that DST.
Yeah, and this seems like it would be a minimal investment. So Matt, like you were saying, don't risk more than you're willing to lose. So this seems like an easy way to just kind of merge into commercial real estate.
Yeah, it can be. It can be, again, with the pros and cons that I mentioned before. Rick was spot on when, you know, it's kind of the last leg of the road in your investment journey. A lot of the times, most people doing DSTs or thinker like they bought and sold for a lifetime. And now it's like, I'll just put it in a DST and my kids can deal with it kind of thing, is what often happens, because some of the issues that I talked about not being able to get out or whatever. I mean, the reality is it's not going to be their problem. So they just put it in there. They want truly passive. They want to live life. They don't want to worry about their investments. And it is a good way to do that. So, one other way that I should mention briefly that I think is, it's just a step before the all-in option of a DST, and it allows you to get really, really good cash flow, but it's without the fractional ownership part, which I think is a very desired thing for a lot of people, because they just don't want partners. They don't want to be a part of a deal. They want to own a property. And so a lot of people get hung up on that, and I get it. And, you know, I honestly kind of feel the same way. So, there's a lot of commercial buildings, net lease investments across the country that have long-term corporate tenants with 15-year guarantees, and they're 100% ownership. So you own the land, you own the structure, just like anything else, and you just have a tenant on a very long-term lease. So they pay all the expenses. If you don't know what a triple net lease is, they pay all the expenses, maintenance, property tax, insurance, etc. So it is passive. You're not getting late night phone calls. And compared to a residential investment, you can often get 3 to 4 times the amount of cash flow. So it's great for older clients that, again, have built up a portfolio. They have a bunch of appreciation, but it's not really churning off the cash flow that it should. And maybe they're retiring or just retired, and their cash flow is now in a very different position because they're not working anymore. So this really helps to maximize their cash flow, utilizing really everything we've talked about today with a 1031. Or a reverse 1031, keeping your money in the real estate, and then really just it's a cash flow optimization play. So I just want to mention that real quick.
So we're coming to a close, Rick. What advice do you have to give to our listeners and our viewers?
Yeah, jump in. Buy real estate. Become a real estate investor. Don't be a spectator that's just reading about it, wishing that you were a part of the game. Don't be a speculator trying to guess where home values are going to go. Work beyond even being an investor from a nature of just running the numbers and staking it, sticking into one asset class, but become a real estate collector. You know, some people growing up collected baseball cards, or they collected coins, or they collected, you know, I see a lot of people collect old cars, and they got the classic car, and they got the hot rod, and they got the muscle cars. In real estate, if you can become a real estate collector, that means that you've got a variety of different real estate. It creates diversification in and amongst itself and gives you an opportunity to accumulate wealth and build passive income to the point where you have the freedom factor in your life. And I always define the freedom factor. Christina, you and I wrote a book on this topic called Real Estate Agent Freedom. Or the freedom factor is when you have more passive income than all your expenses. Like passive, not active, not earned income, not commission income, not a salary, but passive income. And that's really what this is all about. It's about building investments that create that kind of passive income that supersede all of your expenses. And so you now have the freedom of your calendar to do what you want to do.
And Matt, we just scratched the surface. I know we could talk about this for hours. So what's the best way for our listeners to get a hold of you and to discuss this with you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I can give my contact info as well. My phone number is 925-380-9006. You can call or text that number. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Or Matt H, M-A-T-T and the letter H, at intero-commercial.com. So those are the best ways. And yeah, I'd love to talk, you know, answer questions, whatever your unique situation is. Obviously, we can't really give advice on unique situations on something like this. So whatever your situation is going to be different than the next guy. So Would love to talk to you. And, you know, as far as just kind of general advice, you know, buy, like Rick said, you know, but buy right and make sure you surround yourself with the right people and the right professionals. Timing the market is frankly a fool's game. And if the smartest investors out there understand that, and, you know, they know timing the bottom of the market is absolutely more luck than skill. It just is. And so you can't rely on that. You can look at metrics and fundamentals and you can kind of see if you're close, but, you know, you don't know if you're right here on the close down or things just started to come back up. But, you know, trying to time it perfectly at the bottom, again, it's just a fool's game. So get yourself the best people, the best data, the best information, and then pull the trigger, because, you know, the best things in life are right outside your comfort zone. So you're going to have to push yourself a little bit.
So good. And I'll put your information also in the description and in the comment section. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I was just going to add, don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait. That's being a collector. Don't wait to buy real estate. Buy real estate and wait. Because really, truly, not owning real estate is hazardous to your wealth, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So thank you so much, Rick and Matt, for taking the time to share your knowledge and expertise with us. And for our listeners, be sure to join our Facebook group or Investors Thrive, and we'll update you on all the information on real estate investing. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bye, everyone.
Take care.